Hey everyone, welcome to Danny Chats. This is episode number 40. Yes, number 40. And today I'm joined by another very special guest. It's somebody that I met recently at the Transplant Games. Hi Luke, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you, Danny. How about yourself?
I'm very, very good, thank you. As I mentioned, I met Luke at the Transplant Games and we got on really well. He's been going there for a while now, and so he was super helpful to me as it was my first time. And then I received a message recently from Luke saying that he'd made a film called The Other Side. And it basically follows, or it's talking to three sets of families, two like parents of families, and their children have all been through the transplant process. So I watched this, it was really, really emotional, and I wanted to get Luke on to talk about it and find out a bit more myself about it, how he recorded it and everything like that. So Luke, where did you get the idea to do this?
So this idea came from my second year at uni, actually. We were tasked to make a short documentary for one of the modules. So I thought it'd be interesting to explore the 12-hour period between receiving a call for a transplant and then handing over their child for the operation. And because it's something that me as a patient, I only saw my viewpoint of it, so I was quite curious to see what a parent's perspective would be on it. So we filmed that interview, and that was quite an emotional interview because it's quite a lot of emotions you're going through in those sort of 12-24 hours when you receive the call, and you're just in limbo waiting to hear if it goes ahead or not. So it was really from there where the question came about being, well, what do the parents feel throughout the whole process, from diagnosis to living with the condition to the transplant to post-transplant? So, being part of the transplant games, it sort of broadened my horizons at the people who have been affected by transplants and the transplant process. So, for my final year piece at university, where I got to make something that you're passionate about, I thought it was a prime opportunity to explore this topic further and make a short documentary about it.
It is absolutely amazing. It's such a good documentary. It's 15 minutes long, which isn't, you know, too long, but oh my God, I was so sucked in, and it's so emotional, you know, the stories in it. But they're talking about their young child that, you know, he goes to his school and he tells all the other children about his operation and stuff. And like, oh, it's just so emotional. And it's very different even for me. I've been through the transplant process myself, but to hear it from the side of a parent, especially for such a young child, you know, scary.
Yes, no, exactly. I think because my transplant friends myself, like, they all had their transplants when they were kids, so they don't really remember it, but yeah. It's a very traumatic period of life, so that you won't forget that in a heartbeat if you're a parent of that child. So we're incredibly fortunate that our participants in the documentary were so open about that time and gave us a really good retelling of their journeys, really.
Yeah, because it was interesting, you know, I'm glad that you picked more than one family, because they're all, I always say this anyway, but everyone's transplant journey is different, and all their stories, you know, although the end result was kind of the same for all of them, the journey was just different. On so many different levels, you know, and each family reacted slightly different to certain situations, and it kind of just shows that there is no set path for it, and you know, how you react at the time is just how you react, and there's no set path for every individual, and it was just really nice to hear those three different stories.
No, of course, and I think that's something that was very paramount in making this documentary, was that there is no right or wrong way approaching this or dealing with it in regards. And that was something when we were first like planning a documentary and seeing what we can achieve from it. One of my research questions was, in fact, to see if there was any similarities at all in the way parents dealt with the emotions, or like if there was, like, once we filmed interviews and sort of reviewed it in the edit, was to see if there was any similarities, or two, if there was any links in how they dealt with it. And it there wasn't. Each family dealt a bit differently, and I think that's what makes it a bit more special, because it just shows that despite going through a similar process, not the same process, but a similar process, they all went through different ranges of emotions. And I mean, we only chose a small sample. I only chose three because of the time we had, but I'm sure if a further study was done or a further documentary was made, it would highlight that there will be so many more ways to deal with them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I find that just through doing these chats, you know, like I say, everyone's journey has sort of ended up in the same place. We've all had transplants, but everyone's sort of lead up to it was different. The way they dealt with it after was different. The way they went through the recovery. Some people were out of hospital in 5 days. Some people, you know, were in hospital for weeks. But we've all kind of now got to that same stage, though, which is really good. I mean, the children in your documentary, they're all fit, healthy, you know, living. The young girl that was the tractor driver, her dad's a farmer, you know, I love seeing that. And he's, you know, just encouraging her to just go out and do whatever she feels comfortable doing.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, touch wood, all the children that received the transplants in the documentary, they're all doing very well at the moment. And I hope that they continue doing well. But yeah, it just highlights the amazing work organ donation does and how it improves the quality of life so drastically.
Yeah, that was another thing that it was nice to see, you know, for people that maybe haven't even been through the transplant process or don't need to ever, but they see that video and hopefully it will encourage people to become organ donors and talk about it a lot more.
Yeah, of course. I mean, any work revolving on organ donation, promoting it, it helps have that conversation, and showing this documentary and sharing it out the past couple of weeks and speaking about it in the press. We've been receiving messages from loads of people saying that it's really questioned their mindset on organ donation as a whole, and they're actively trying to like tell people what their wishes are. And reading those messages, it really warms the heart, because it's what you hope to hear.
Yeah. Well, it's so well put together, you know, the way you've edited it and everything. You know, I believe you could be shown in schools and stuff, because it's short, it's 15 minutes, but it's captivating. You've kept it really, like I say, edited really well. All the shots are good. The families are interesting. They might have been nervous about telling their story, but they're good at telling the story. So yeah, you know, it's something that could be used, you know, to spread more awareness, and hopefully it does get the sort of the views that it deserves.
Yeah, I mean, that's my main wish, is to just like hoping that this video finds its way to the people that need to see it, basically.
Yeah,
it's because it is quite a niche topic, but at the same time, from what the feedback I've been receiving so far, it has a real powerful effect on people who've watched it.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, I didn't know what to expect. You just sent me this video, and then 15 minutes, and then I was just captivated. And even afterwards, you know, just couldn't stop thinking about it. It's so well done.
Thank you very much.
So did you meet these people through the transplant games?
Yeah, so all the families I had met at the games at some point. I've been competing since I was 16. My first games were in Liverpool in 2016. I've also worked alongside with a children's charity, Children's Liver Disease Foundation. And they've been providing amazing work to my family since I was diagnosed with biliary atresia as a child. So I worked with them to help like increase my network, because obviously I knew of some families that may be interested, but with their help, we managed to like broaden the scope and managed to get quite a few inquiries from their end. So it was alongside CLDF where I managed to bring all the participants together and sort of bring this piece together, really.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it's nice that these people were willing to share their story. I'm sure, you know, if you had reached out to more people, more would, because it seems quite a lot of us are quite happy to talk about it in one way or another.
Yes.
So, you know, you did this and you mentioned that you had your transplant, was it 10 years ago?
Yeah, so my 10-year anniversary is coming up in November. Yeah, I think it's quite fitting that I made this piece, this short documentary on organ donation, and it's my 10 years anniversary. So I feel that's quite a nice, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's a fitting like tribute almost.
Tribute, that's the way, yeah, like a tribute to my donor family. Because it just highlights the amazing work it all does.
Yeah. And, you know, you did mention why you had your transplant, but, you know, can you tell us a bit about that story?
Of course. How much detail would you like?
Well, tell us how you got diagnosed and what happened at that time, you know, when you got taken into hospital, your parents found out you were going to have a transplant. I mean, you're young now, so you were very young then. So what you can remember of it?
Okay. Well, I don't remember anything about when I was diagnosed, because I was diagnosed when I was 4 weeks old.
Okay.
So I was diagnosed with an extremely rare liver condition called biliary atresia.
Yeah.
And I'll explain in layman terms what it does to the body. Basically, the bile ducts from the gallbladder to the liver gets blocked. So the bile can go into the liver, but it can't then escape. And that causes like really bad irreversible damage to the liver. So after you get diagnosed with biliary atresia, they perform a kind of a preventative operation called a Kasai procedure. And that removes the gallbladder and attaches the, I want to say the stomach or the small intestines directly to the liver. I need to be fact checked on that. I can't remember. but it sort of, it bypasses the gallbladder, so the bile can escape. And that sort of gives a lifeline so that you can get put on the list and get a transplant in that period. Now, for whatever reason, in my case, that preventative operation worked really well. So it lasted around 11 years before my liver started to fail. In most cases with a Kasai operation, it's usually like 6 months or like maybe less than a year before you need a transplant sort of thing. So growing up, the doctors, like I was seeing doctors quite regularly, and it was always on the agenda saying, oh, in the future, you will be needing a transplant. We just need to monitor when and where. So when I was 11, I noticed I was getting more tired quicker, and I was feeling like a bit dizzy, a bit lightheaded and stuff. So we realized like one of our blood appointments that my levels were starting to drop. So that's when the topic of transplantation came up. So when I was put on the list, actually, it was when they were changing the system a little bit, because they were putting quality of life over like urgency, medical urgency. So I was still pretty fit in regards to being put on the transplant assessment. And in fact, actually, during my transplant assessment, when I went up to the clinic to get the tests done and everything, the surgeon saw me and just said, he's too healthy.
Really?
He doesn't need it. I think they had a board appeal or something, and they realized actually, if they did it now, I'll be fitter and stronger and healthier to then recover quicker.
That definitely makes sense, rather than wait until your body is really, really fighting.
If that wasn't the case, then I probably would have had been postponed on putting the list for a couple more years. But because that ruling was in my favour, I was put on the list in January, February time, and then by November, I had my call and I had my transplant procedure done. But saying that, in those, I think, 9 months, in that period, I went down very quickly. So it was very apparent that if I was made to wait longer, it would have been like quite serious in regards of my health. So we're quite glad that it was ruled in my favor, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I've learned about the liver is when it starts to go wrong, it can go wrong very, very fast. You know, I've spoken to people that have had an underlying issue, kind of like myself, and not known about it. So there wasn't diagnosed at birth or anything. And then you're fit, fighting healthy. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, you're in hospital with liver failure. And, you know, you're literally on your last legs. It's mad how important the liver is and what it does.
Yeah, exactly. And then my apparently after my transplant operation, the surgeon looked at my liver and they were like saying, yeah, he had like a year tops with it. It was completely like dead, basically. Yeah. Apart from a really small like circle of life. I think one of my family friends said that if I was that energetic before transplant with that small bit of healthy liver, they're like, he's going to be off the walls with a brand new healthy liver.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, actually. Was you sort of into swimming and everything before you had your transplant? Because obviously I met you at the transplant game, you were swimming. Is that something that you did before?
So in terms of sports and everything, I did do sports. I did live like an active life, but it was never competitively. It was never high intensity, because I'll get tired. I had asthma growing up, and also I wasn't able to do contact sports as well, because I had an enlarged spleen, so it compromised quite a lot of stuff if I went to do contact sports. So yeah, before transplant, I did do stuff, but it wasn't to nearly the extent I'm doing now after transplant.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I didn't do anything before transplant for years and years. So after my transplant, I kind of had all this extra energy, and I was doing these chats and I was talking to people that were doing transplant games or swimming across Lake Ontario, as one of the ladies that I've interviewed did. There's like 52 kilometers swim. So all these people were telling me marathons and everything. And I was like, well, you know, I've got no excuse now. I need to get back at it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I met you at the transplant games, the UK games. I've talked about this a lot on my podcasts, but for anyone that's sort of listening that doesn't know what it is, it's basically it's kind of like the Olympics, but for people that have had transplants. So it's a chance for us all to get together, compete in a really, really friendly environment, and basically just meet a lot of other people that have had transplants. But it is competitive, and you know, you went and you competed in the European Games as well recently, right?
Yeah, so most recently I competed in the European Games in Oxford at the end of August. And that was a lot of fun. It was my first time competing in the adult age category, from 18 to 29, I believe that the category was. So it's quite a large category compared to like 15 to 17 and 13 to 15. So yeah, that was I've been to a few World Games before in Newcastle and Malaga, but that was as a junior. So going to these games as an adult, it was a really fun experience, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially, you know, like you say, everyone's got these same stories. It must be interesting to meet people from all over Europe, you know.
Yeah, and because for these games, we all stayed in one place in Bradley College, so it had a very much felt like the atmosphere of the Olympic Village. Yeah. So you can literally go and have dinner, and you can sit with a table of Argentinians, or each event you can just go and sit next to supporters and just ask them their story and where they're from, and it's a lovely atmosphere, it really is.
Yeah, and are you hoping to go to the World Games next year?
Yeah, fingers crossed. I'm hoping. I expect. Apparently, we should be hearing about selection this week.
Yeah.
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would be amazing.
I would love to see you out there. You're a very strong swimmer for a start, and I know you didn't sign up for it, but you were a fast 100 meter runner.
Yes, I mean, before I went to these last games in Leeds, I loved sprinting and cycling and swimming, not all at the same time. I did them all separately. I don't think I have the stamina to do a triathlon.
Yes.
But I think because of my last year of uni as well, I couldn't dedicate the time to train for all three of the events. So I decided to stick with swimming because I really enjoyed the club atmosphere that the university had. So these games just passed. I just focused on swimming because I needed to balance out my uni work as well as training as well. In the past, I've had the luxury of doing loads of training and competing in loads of sports. Because as much as I like to say I go for the games for the social environment, as soon as I get on the start line, I am very competitive.
I was shaking so much for my 100 meters race. It's the first race I've competed in for over 20 years. I used to run for like athletics clubs and stuff when I was a teenager, but I was shaking so much. It was unreal. And I mean, you saw is that his name's gone out of my head, but he ran the 100 meters in under 11 seconds, 10.99.
Oh, Lewis Evans.
Lewis, that's it.
Yes.
Lewis.
He is
absolutely incredible, man.
I remember my first time going to the games. I was 16 at Liverpool, and I had my team manager said, "Oh, enter as much as you want because you can always pull out, but you can't enter on a day." So like, okay, I'll do everything sort of thing, and I ended up doing everything because I had such a blast doing it. But at that point, on Sunday it was the athletics, so. I wasn't very much expecting the athletics day to be like a school sports day, like very chilled atmosphere, people just trying their best, like bit of fun here and there. But what I turned up to was these like what 17-year-old like lads in like full lycra, sprint blocks, sprint shoes, like throwing smash talk around everyone, and like they were like fully psyching themselves out to like fully compete. And I was just there with some fresh trainers thinking I was really cool.
I was really
prepared for this. It was an eye-awakening experience, my first games, because it showed me that despite growing up with illnesses or like conditions and chronic illness sort of thing, you can push your body and you can compete at high-level games, high-intensity games. But yeah, that first experience was very, very funny for me.
Yeah, I felt that because I turned up with just my normal running trainers. Everyone had spikes and everything like that, you know, fully prepared, eating jelly sweets before they were racing. I think I had pizza. it's such a great experience. And someone did say it to me before I went. They said that the people that get the biggest cheers are the ones that come in last. And that is so true. It was so nice to see everyone stood in the stands just cheering on, you know, whoever was just putting in their maximum effort, really.
Yeah, I mean, because it just, no matter what way you come in that race, it takes so much for you to cross that line in the end.
Yeah.
The story, the journey that every person in that race has done to get to that point is just incredible. So, quite rightly so, we give each and every one of them a standing ovation when they cross the line. It's such a heartwarming experience. And actually, now I remember actually, did you? I'm not sure if you had this when you first set down on the 100 meter start line, but for me, I was getting myself ready, and the older boys were asking, going around, what transplant do you have? I was like, liver, kidney, heart, and like go around the list. And then like, all right, so who's kidneys here? And they're like, put their hand up and everything. And they're like, all right, got my eyes on you. And I was like, what's that all about? And apparently, because of the drugs that the kidney recipients are on, they get like an adrenaline boost in their medication. So they run faster than like the rest of us.
It's like being on steroids or something. Yeah.
Exactly. So that was really funny to hear, because it's the only games where doping's allowed, basically.
Yeah. Someone did say to me, they said, do you get drugs tested before? I said, I doubt it, because everyone there is going to be on enough medication.
It's a requirement rather than...
Yeah, you have to be on medication. You have to be on drugs, otherwise you can't perform.
Exactly.
That's funny. Well, I've got a question about your film, actually, again. How long did that take to film?
What was that, sorry?
How long did it take you to put that film together?
Yeah, so from start to end, it took just under a year. The first, I think 6 months or so was planning and getting logistics and trying to find, or trying to first decide the tone and the feel of the documentary, and also trying to find willing participants to film the documentary with. And then a couple of months was trying to pass ethics through the university, because my documentary is in an academic term, it's my dissertation. So I had to pass it through a board of ethics, which I'm sure if your viewers who have been to university may know the pain of passing ethics through university boards. And because I was filming with children and with drones, it was sent to like the highest level of the thing. So I had to like write those more like paperwork in order to get it approved. But it was all fine in the end.
I hope you got a distinction for it.
Yes, I was very happy to receive a first class degree because of the how well the documentary came out. Yeah. I'm really happy that it did so well as well, because it's a very personal topic to myself, and it's a topic which I wanted to do justice with, and I'm really happy now to be able to be coming on shows like this to help share it and promote it, because it's just very special to myself.
Yeah, and I hope everyone that watches this will, because I'll put a link up below, and like I said, it's only 15 minutes, so it's not very long, but it's just so up and down with emotions as they go through their stories, and you finish on it's such a nice high as well. It's so good, it's so heartwarming. It's just a good all-round video to get an idea of what it's like to be a parent, why organ donation is important, and you know what life can be like after.
Yeah, you perfectly summed it up there. That is very well put.
Yeah. So that's it. I'll put a link below this video, and everyone should go and watch it. Right. Thank you very much, Luke.
No, thank you very much for having me.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add? There will be once we stop recording.
Yes, there will be. There always will be. But no, not at all. I think a small thank you to all my interviewees and participants that had helped and supporters that have helped me make this documentary, and to the donor families and donors who said yes and expressed their wishes. Like our lives and the recipients' lives that you see in the documentary, they wouldn't be possible if someone didn't have that conversation. So thank you very much, and I hope the documentary finds whoever needs to see it, really. So thank you very much for having me on.
No, that's no problem at all. And I'll get you back on. Maybe we can talk just before you go to the World Games or after the World Games, and we'll have a little catch up.
Yes, of course, that'd be great.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much, Luke. It was great to speak to you.
Likewise, Danny.
Thank you.